There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You've had 20 years experience in advertising. I imagine you've seen an enormous amount of change in that time in terms of marketing and advertising. What led you to this industry field?
I knew, like, in my third or fourth year of college that I wanted to be in advertising, and then I knew which job and role I wanted to take. And 2 weeks out of college, I got a job at one of the largest agencies in the world, Universal McCann, or, you know, part of IPG. And I've just been doing it ever since. And then even prior to that, I worked at Universal Music doing what could then be characterized as social media marketing, but was then characterized as guerrilla marketing. It's a business I wanted to do, and I'm very fortunate to be able to do it.
It must have been pretty cool to know that, like, straight off the bat, and then just go into the various avenues straight into it.
I got lucky. I'll tell you why. Because in college, I had to work, and I did a lot of jobs, a lot of different types of things. I worked in hospitality. I did outreach and recruitment for the school. I worked at Universal Studios for a while and Cold Stone Creamery. I knew I didn't want to do hospitality, but they were fun jobs. I worked in a real estate office. I was some sort of assistant for a value-added reseller of manufacturing software. And I was like, okay, I don't want to do that. And one of the jobs or internships that I got, which was paid, was a really early stage startup in the advertising business. And they taught me what the advertising business is, the different types of jobs you can do. So I was like, okay, that's the thing I want to do. And specifically around media buying, which is the use of data and, you know, it's a lot of Excel and et cetera, buying advertising space. So it's not creating the ad. It's buying the space to reach the people to generate the sales. Today, it's about automation and technology and data. But then it was just like using your gut intuition. You know, men are going to be watching, on ESPN. So buy ads on ESPN if it's a movie about, you know, four men. If it's a movie for women, you know, buy Cosmo and Elle and those types of, you know, things. So 2 weeks out of college, I got a job at Universal McCann, and it felt like the longest time, because I'd been interviewing and I kind of messed up the interview at that place in particular. And they took me like 3 months to get back to, maybe it felt like 3 months. It could have been like a month and a half, but it just felt like a long time for them to get back to me. So I felt like, oh man, I'm never going to get to do the work I want to do. But they hired me off of my enthusiasm. Fundamentally, I had nothing to offer them other than enthusiasm and the fact that I had a bachelor's degree and I had 9 months of experience working at Universal Music doing the same type of work for a different industry.
But enthusiasm counts for a lot, right?
100%. I mean, it's literally the reason I'm working in this field is because I carried it in the interview, and I carried it for the 2 years I was there, and then I carried it into other places, and you know, gotta love something. Certainly, yeah. I love my wife and my child, but you know, when I was 24, neither of those relationships existed. So, gotta love some professional component of the work, and so I chose to love this business.
So, as much as it's like evolved rapidly in that time, the things you touched on there in terms of like if it's four dudes, you approach ESPN or whatever. Is there any like really foundational things there that haven't changed, like core things with all the technology?
So a couple of things that haven't changed. Creative is still king. We say creative is king, media is queen, because the creative is what compels people. The second thing is smart, passionate, experts in the business still do well. No AI is ever going to take the job of someone who has that experience, because AI, like when you talk about AI, there's a lot of stuff happening right now where people are worried about AI taking jobs, and they will take some jobs, but for a lot of people who are experts in their field, they don't have anything to worry about. It's the people who aren't experts and don't have the interest in becoming an expert, or don't have the opportunity to become an expert, where AI has the possibility of taking jobs. But, you know, even I know we're off on a tangent on AI, but, you know, I look at it as an accelerator, right? Like it's the same thing as the printing press. That was an accelerator for people to share their ideas, and the internet or the calculator was an accelerator to do math faster, and internet is an accelerator for communications. AI is an accelerator for work, and probably will be an accelerator for other things. Whatever you do in 20 to 40 minutes, AI can do for you in like 2 minutes. Mm. And it's pretty good, but that doesn't mean you just give, you know, the final work what the AI spit out. You have to curate it, you have to edit it, modify it, and make sure it's relevant. So humans will never go away in that equation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I had some as a creative, I had some tussles with it at first, but now I'm learning to try and embrace that middle ground, like you're saying. Mm-hmm.
It's good for people like me. Like I'm not creative. Like I am, I guess, technically, because I've created a business and I like to create things for my business and inside the business, but you know, I'm not an artist. And but it's like I was just playing around with Midjourney 2 days ago, and I was overwhelmed with how amazing Midjourney content or images are right now. I haven't touched it in like 3 months. And in that 3 month period, it dramatically improved.
It's the rapid, it's an exponential growth, like
yeah,
rapid. Yeah. I'm really interested to talk to you in terms of the, you know, as an artist, as you know, as a creative person, I consider myself quite entrepreneurial in terms of this balance between the kind of the business and the artistic side. But marketing and advertising as an artist is something I've personally struggled with particular projects. Do you have any advice for creatives in particular? I guess it's about getting the right people, or you know, often we try and do everything ourselves.
Creatives for creatives doing what? What are these people trying to accomplish?
For me in particular, it's, you know, it's around film. Say you have a film project, what's the best kind of approach? Well, it could apply to, you know, a film or a book or even the podcast, anything in a storytelling sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, so it all depends. Everything depends on the goal. Why are you doing this? You know, Simon Sinek, what's your why? That ultimately comes down to it. Like, what are you trying to achieve? Do you want money? Do you want fame? Do you want power? What is it? And then once you decide what you want, then what does it look like in kind of like more tangible terms? I want money. Okay, how much money do you want? Why do you want the money? Well, it's because I want to live the life I want to live. You know, or I want power. Why? Because I want to influence the local politicians to build a park because where I lived, I never had a park, you know, like whatever the case is, like really drill down into the why and then, you know, focus in on the steps you can take today that will lead you down that path and really envision where you need to go with that. Because like, I would actually start the other way. I would say, what does the end point look like? What happened right before the end point, and then right before that, and right before that, and right before that, until you get to a place where you are today. So you can envision all the steps that need to happen. I mean, and what I just described is also how we develop advertising and marketing strategies. It's the same thing. It's have a vision, set the goal, and then as someone I know says, plan your work and work your plan. Just do it.
It's essentially reverse engineering from that. Yeah. That goal. Yeah.
But even that exercise, people don't know why they're doing things.
Mm.
I know why I'm doing things. I want to go to 40 Dodgers games with my son and my wife.
That's awesome.
And I want to travel. You know, I want to be able to go to Hawaii when I want to, go to 40 Dodgers games and not have the stress that often comes with being an entrepreneur. I'm trying to like get out of that situation where there's an abundance of stress.
Mm.
That's what I'm working towards. I don't want like $10 million. I don't want a $100 million business, although that's fine. But you know, the reason I say that specifically, because there's so many people who actually want a $100 million business. Do you know how much ridiculous amount of work and how much of a lunatic you have to be to achieve that? There are people who do, and I say that lovingly, like there's really smart people who are doing really big things and I admire those people, but I don't want to give up time with my family and I don't want to give up my sanity and I don't want to give up those really precious moments with my child in order to achieve a $100 million company. I'm happy with a $10 million company and things are great.
Time is the most precious commodity we have, without 100%. Pulling cliches, but especially I think parenting really brings that into context. Like, and I just realized with my own son, how fast that first 10 years goes. Like I remember being a kid and you have those school holidays and they feel like an eternity. But when, you know, I mean, I'd like to think we do change as adults, but it's not as rapid as kids. So that I really realized in context how fast that first 10-year block goes. So yeah, if you're giving away such a large portion of your time to something that big, it's a balancing act, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to give up so much.
Yeah. 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 No, it makes total sense. So traditional marketing, in a sense, it's just with social media and the nature of influencers and the beast that's TikTok. Traditional, very old school traditional marketing just doesn't have any legs anymore. Would that be a fair?
Well, I mean, you can see it in the numbers. Like television advertising, for example, is like a $60 or $70 billion business. Digital is about a $306 billion business. So traditional media, so print, radio, television, is becoming digital, the digital component of that, right? So connected TV, streaming, audio, Pandora, Spotify, podcasts, and like, you know, the radio, the digital stream of the radio stations. Print, you could argue it's the iPad, but that's kind of like gone away. And then you have out of home is becoming digital out of home. So the fundamentals, we always, you know, there's so many people who want growth hacks. All I got for you are fundamentals. We execute on the fundamentals. That's all we do. That's all. People are looking for shortcuts, often paying in time and money two or three times the actual cost because they have to go the wrong path first, which is a shortcut. When we talk about marketing and advertising, we're talking about the fundamentals, like set a strategy, activate that strategy, don't deviate from that strategy until the data tells you to. And then, you know, use the method. Now, the only thing that is kind of like unique that does change is that the methods and practices do change over time. But that's not, none of that are growth hacks. That's just understanding. Like I was talking to someone recently and worked in advertising from like 2010 to 2012, somewhere around there. And everything she knew about digital advertising and like advertising on Meta had changed to what we're doing today. So, you know, it used to be that Meta advertising was about granular keyword and interest targeting, lookalike targeting, and audience targeting, retargeting, I should say, right? A lot of different granular types of targeting. Now it's the exact opposite. It's broad targeting, age, gender, and location. So, for example, our agency, we're a white label for other agencies. So, creative shops and strategy firms, et cetera, work with us to grow their business, and to go to market together. So a creative shop will, you know, do all the ads and the strategy on that. We'll be the media buying partner and we'll buy the advertising space. And we're running ads on Meta. We're spending, you know, a few thousand dollars a month targeting 140 million people. On the surface, that seems wrong because you don't have there's not 140 million agency owners in the country. There's maybe 20 to 40,000, maybe 80,000 if you include the second or third in command. So there's 80,000 people. How could I possibly get in front of the right people by targeting 140 million people? So this speaks to the methods and practices that works right now. Broad targeting on Meta works really well because you're leveraging AI and the machine learning algorithm, and over time you're telling it who your best customers are by pumping it full of the best ads that you have. So I'm getting leads that are turning into sales by targeting 140 million people and getting a lead that I'm talking to and having good conversations with. So that's, you know, in the past you would have said, I'm going to target, you know, just business owners or just agency owners, that keyword targeting segment in Meta. So when I talk about the fundamentals of marketing and advertising, you've got to know the fundamentals, but also then pair it up with what works right now in the marketplace. 7 years from now, who knows what it's going to look like? And 7 years ago, it was very different. But today in 2024, it's that broad targeting. And then you pair it up with versions and variations of control and variable testing on your creatives, and you have a winning formula for success. So when we talk about marketing and advertising, the difference between people who know what they're doing and the people who don't are the ones who are actually spending money and time to understand the practices that work right now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Which is why we don't hire people out of college, because people out of college don't have any of that experience.
So there's a level of adaptability to the time.
It's experience. I don't want people making mistakes with our clients' money. That's the point. I've been in the business for 20 years. Our people have been in the business 7 to 20 years. You know, they know how to work the systems in the favor of our clients.
That's sticking to the game plan. That's interesting. It's almost like, don't know a lot about stocks, but you know, just like not reacting on emotion in terms of the stock market changing. And I also watched this this series on the NFL guys and the quarterback for Minnesota. He, you know, he basically said just stick, you know, stick to the game plan week in, week out, regardless of result. And it sounds
100%.
It sounds kind of simple, but actually to apply that, you know, when they take a massive loss, to not sort of react on that in a way and just stick to the game plan and just keep applying the same, you know, the same
thing.
Well,
because they know why they took the loss. I don't follow NFL, so don't talk to me about the...
Either do I, actually. I just watched this series.
about the intricacies of the game. But I think what's interesting is, you know, people, the fans will have opinions and they're in the stands. They don't matter. The fans don't matter because no one, the people on the field matter. And, you know, there's something similar with the Dodgers. So Major League Baseball, I got a photo of, you know, a painting of Mookie Betts over there. And Dave Roberts, the manager of the Dodgers, gets so much slack for the way he, or flack, the way he manages the team in tight situations. And the reason things don't work out usually, there's two reasons. Number one, you didn't actually follow the plan. You made a mistake in the activation of it. You didn't execute the way you're supposed to. Or the odds just, you know, 3 out of 10 times it'll work in your favor, 7 out of 10 it won't. You were just in one of the 7 of the 10, but over time, the odds work out in your favor. It's like a take on gambling. Like if you understand the odds on gambling, you know how to win and how to, you know, whether, you know, when to cut your losses if you're losing. But with sport, you really have the variability of the humans and their ability to actually execute on the way that it's working. So it's probably not that the plan is flawed. It's much more that you just didn't execute on it the way you're supposed to.
So for somebody who's potentially starting a small business and they're not very tech savvy and they're completely overwhelmed by how rapidly technology is moving, and then they start just throwing money kind of willy-nilly into marketing, what would you recommend to someone in that kind of position?
Yeah, I mean, talk to an expert. Don't waste your time and money. It's like when you get hurt, you go to the doctor. You don't go to your neighbor. You don't go to your neighbor, Steve. When your car is broken, you go to a mechanic. You also then don't go to your neighbor, Steve, who doesn't know anything about cars, right? You go to an expert. Like it's the same thing with this. Like you can spend thousands of hours and tens of thousands of dollars getting it wrong for a long period of time, or you can spend a few hundred or a few thousand dollars just like getting the answer. I'll give you an example of that. We don't do search engine optimization internally, and I've been trying to figure it out. Like I just was like, I'm going to learn it. We do ad buying. Our job is to run ads to generate sales. Search engine optimization is about really just ensuring that Google knows when your page is supposed to come up on a search because it's relevant to a person searching for something. I paid someone like $2,000. And I now have a full-on framework that I just hired someone for to do just this for the next year and a half. I literally spent 5 years trying to figure out search engine optimization for our business.
Yeah.
I could have paid someone just a few thousand dollars and I could have done this 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how it is with everything. You're going to either spend your time or your money. And hire an expert so you don't waste a lot of your money learning it yourself. Because when you're running ads and you don't know what you're doing, you're not actually running ads to grow the business. You're actually running ads to learn how advertising works. And that's not a good use of your time either. You're off your path.
Mm. Yeah, know what you're good at, know what you can offer and stick to the role.
And plus, another way of thinking of it is look at your highest value job. Like what is the thing you know how to do best and what you should be getting paid the most for? Like it's particularly funny for me when doctors and lawyers want to understand how Facebook ads work, like lawyers more than doctors. Like, dude, you went to school for like at least 4 years. You know a ton more than I do. Like, why are you trying to figure out Facebook? Like, go help someone with the law and get paid like hundreds of dollars an hour just to talk to people. Don't worry about Facebook. People are weird.
What would you consider either so call it a campaign you've been involved in yourself or one you've seen? What's an example of one that you think has been like really successful over the years?
I'll talk about one of my early wins. I was maybe 26 years old, and so this was, I don't know, 15, 17 years ago, somewhere around there. And there's this movie called When a Stranger Calls, which came out it was mostly girls under 18 was the movie. It was like a young girl, she's in a cabin babysitting, and the call is coming from inside the house, which was a remake at that point of a 70s or an 80s movie. And so we ran a campaign where, like, we had a full-on profile on MySpace. From MySpace, you remember MySpace?
I love MySpace.
Yeah. You had a full-on profile as the character. That profile had a phone number where you could call an 800 number and talk to the character, Jill, from the movie. It was a recording. Mm. But she'd say like, hey, sorry, hold on, I got another call. And then like it would progressively get more scary for you listening in. And there was also a chat bot. Now in 2024, chatbots are everywhere in a dime a dozen at this point. But in 2005 or six, primitive. It was with AOL Instant Messenger. It had to be programmed in. And we won an award for the best media plan of the year and best in show in 2000 for that in 2006 or 2007 for that movie When a Stranger Calls, because it was such an innovative plan. We got over a billion ad impressions. A lot of them came from AOL at the time because they just pushed the heck out of that thing, but it was like such a big hit for Sony Pictures. And I don't think you can see it here, but I have a photo of that. It's like this. I'm in the middle. We won an award. That was my boss Elias Plishner and my collaborator Leslie Terry, who they all have big titles in the music in the movie business now. Like Elias is like a global head of marketing or something at Sony Pictures.
did you push the MySpace thing, or was it a collaborative idea?
It was collaborative. I was the lead on it. I mean, the reason why I feel comfortable taking some level of credit on it, I was the lead on this whole thing, right? I didn't program the bot. My job was to buy the media, ensure that all the parts ran smoothly. I was the project manager, essentially. Mm. And to ensure that, you know, the advertising delivered the way it's supposed to deliver, to negotiate added value in terms of, you know, getting more ad impressions. And ultimately the movie opened number one that weekend, which is always the sign.
Man, I loved MySpace. Like when I had I was in a band as a teenager, we had the MySpace page, we had the shows on there. You could like, it was really kind of, I think, and it sounds like in this case, it's just this direct engagement with the fans, with less of the kind of noise. Is that perhaps like, what was the, why was that the core of it? Was it the, it was the direct fan, obviously the direct fan engagement experience.
Look, I think I go back to the fundamentals. People were there. You had to be there to market a movie. That's really it. It's like today, the equivalent would be TikTok. What I think was really interesting about MySpace is inadvertently it was teaching people to code. Because I listened to a podcast about the rise and downfall of MySpace. There was a bug in the system that made it so that people could actually access the code of the site, which then means on the page, all the cool, like you go to MySpace and there's just like stuff everywhere. Like if you have epilepsy, it's the worst place to be. And there's stuff everywhere because you could actually code your page to do certain things. So you need to know a little bit of HTML. So a whole generation of people learn how to code, at least some very basic things, because of a bug inside MySpace that turned out to be a feature, not a bug. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's very interesting. But it goes back to the fundamentals. It's where are people giving their attention? Is it relevant for what we're trying to sell? And how do we integrate with it such that it feels less like an ad and more like an experience?
Mm.
And that's actually the breakdown of what happened in MySpace. And then, you know, the larger campaign was, how do we give our ideal customer an immersive experience that is novel?
Unique.
And unique. Like, what can we do that's, because that, like, that's, in my opinion, that's how you break out. That's one of the ways that you break out. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of marketing. People see, research shows between 5,000 and 10,000 marketing messages a day everywhere you go. And the result of that is it's noise. Like, you don't, it's hard to like break out of that. So our goal, and especially movie marketing, is very interesting, and people are very interested in trailers and any experiences related to movies. So that's already an entertainment point over there. So people are much more willing to engage with that than compared to, like, you know, auto insurance or whatever.
Yeah.
Erectile dysfunction,
yeah,
pills, you know, not that interesting.
Yeah.
Right. So we gave them a novel experience, and our job is to ensure that people remember us so that when it's time to see the movie, you go to the theaters. Now, that's the only, that's not the only thing that happened. They definitely had a lot of television running, and sort of more standardized digital advertising, on like Quizilla, I think, was a thing at the time, and all these names that I can't really remember, but it was a great campaign. And, I left Sony Pic, I left Universal McCann and working on Sony Pictures. I left after that, shortly after. And it was another lesson. I took a job for money and I didn't like the job. So the jobs that you take for money are not always going to be the best jobs. And frankly, I think they're more likely to be the worst jobs.
I would agree. Yeah. I've had a number of career changes and so on. So it's, a lot of left and rights, but that immersive thing, the novel experience, it's, there is so much noise. And I guess that's what I'm getting at. It feels like a lot of noise in an advertising sense. And how do you cut through that in a savvy business way, but in a genuine way, I guess it's, how is it personal if you're trying to hit 140 million, you know, there isn't really a personal element to it, but I understand the core. Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's a creative fueled math equation, right? Like, you know, you see businesses advertising at 2 a.m. Like, we used to work on Acid on TV products, so there's a brand, and the brand was Acid on TV, but the products were like, you know, I don't remember exactly, but they're like, you know, the George Foreman grill plus ab roller plus, you know, some random thing to help you cut like garlic better, like just on a completely unrelated brand. But the equation fundamentally is, if you buy advertising space for a low enough cost, which you do at 2 a.m, and you get just enough sales, you become profitable. And then if you can do that again, if you can do 10 times as many commercials and get about 10 times as many sales, you are still profitable. You just make more profit because you spent more money and you got more sales. So your profit increases in terms of not percentage, but value. So, and this is where the art and the science of the business comes in. Like, there's a science component, like the math needs to pay out, but the art is what creates the engagement that people will respond to. So when you're buying ads on Meta, for example, ads on Meta are very, very expensive. The higher the quality of the ad, not the creative, but the targeting, the higher the quality of the targeting, I'll say, it's dramatically more expensive. It can literally be 10 times more expensive between the lowest quality ad and the highest quality ad. And now it's actually the opposite. Now the highest value, the most value you get is when you spend the most on advertising space, because you're leveraging the power of the algorithm to generate sales, which is very different than television, which is you just go lowest common denominator. You spend so little that even if you make one sale, it's valuable. And this goes back to the idea of understanding what works and what works right now, because, you know, there's a lot of television people who didn't make it into digital media because they just didn't want to learn, or they were old enough in their career where, you know, or senior, they've been in the career long enough that I just got to stick it out for another 5 years and I'm going to retire anyway. So what's the point of learning a whole new way of doing it that, you know, is different than my entire career? Understandable completely. But the fundamental idea is knowledge in this business is effervescent. I don't know it changes. Like, you can't sit still on something you learned 3 years ago because today could be completely different. And that's a big part of our success as well. We just know what's working, what's not, because we're doing a lot in the business.
And for you guys, the data and the analytics just reveals everything.
Yeah. Clients, it's really interesting. We have clients who are very smart about a lot of things, but they don't know the intricacies of ad buying. And then they think they know everything about the intricacies of ad buying. And then we do thing like they tell us to optimize a certain way and it tanks the campaign. Then they're upset that our campaign tanked when it was like literally their direction.
Yeah.
And we told them, like, look, this is probably going to hurt the campaign. So, you know, this is a practice unto itself, and there's room for everyone to make money. There's room for everyone to be successful. It's really just a matter of picking the experts. Like, the people who are working and starting a business, they probably, you know, there's kind of like three levels of entrepreneurship, right? There's the practitioner work. Like, I know how to do something, whether I'm a plumber or a programmatic media buyer or whatever the case is, I know how to do something really well. I've gained the expertise level there. But that's not to say you know how to grow a team. And that's not to say then you know how to grow a business. There are three different types of work, which I experienced. When I started my business, I knew how to do the ad buying component, but I didn't know how to manage a team very effectively. And I certainly didn't know how to grow a business, but I learned along the way. And that was a whole journey of like figuring things out and being okay with failure and trying to be a better version of myself.
Failure is a big one. Growth lessons.
Awesome.
I'm interested when you get a new client, a potential client for a campaign. Is there a consistent first question you ask them?
How'd you find us?
Okay.
No, it's just, you know, I've done enough sales calls. It's, you know, how'd you find us? What do you do and like, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
What's the situation you're in that you're looking for help with? And then we really need to understand. And then I go into my spiel about, like, you know, it's strategy. You need to understand your goals, tell them what we do. And then, you know, we end the conversation with like how you can work with us. Like, we'll send you a form, you're going to fill it out, and then we're going to send you back a proposal. And the form asks you a lot of the same questions that I broke at the beginning of this conversation about, like, your strategy. What are you trying to accomplish? So we can understand what you know already about the business.
Yeah, you get an accurate overview. I was just thinking back to my design days because I studied architecture, and I'd get clients coming and saying, oh, you know, we want to design this restaurant or this cafe. And it's sort of whittled down to like, what's your budget? Because we'd have so many meetings about some grandiose thing, and then when it would get to the budget question, we'd realize that, like, you know, the concept was kind of flawed given the budget, and then we would, you know, would start. So it kind of got to this point where we had to put that on the table straight up to avoid, you know, to avoid stuff further down the line. 100%. Obviously, in addition to, you know, we can offer you all the thing, getting the overall picture, and this is what we can offer you. But, like, we got to get an idea of your budget here, you know, because with design, people can have grandiose ideas and not necessarily understand, you know, the costs behind it and the process.
Legit.
Yeah. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer some kind of challenge. Now, it could be anything based on our conversation, just some, you know, nothing grandiose, but, you know, the core of this show has been about really the little things that we do. Is there anything relative to marketing or your expertise or even what we've been discussing that could be offered to the listeners?
Like, so do you want me to tell listeners what I think would be a good challenge for them to do?
Yeah. And it could be directly related to your profession or even to just what we've been chatting about.
Anything. I got a good one.
Okay.
I got a good one. So this is something I've done. So if you want attention, so to grow a business, you need attention so that people know that you exist. And then like awareness, like, okay, you exist and you do this type of work. And then they need to know you, like you, and trust you. So attention and knowing someone, same type of thing. They need to like you, and people get to like you over time. And then over time, then you get to trust. The best way to do that in 2024, I'd say regardless of the industry you're in, is TikTok. So commit to posting at least once a day, 5 to 7 days a week for the next year. And here's the reason why this is good. Number one, TikTok is the primetime programming capital of the world, right? Like, you get the best content aimed just for you, exactly what you're interested in, any time of day or night. Number two, a lot of people are paying attention to TikTok. Number three, there are people of all ages on TikTok. Number four, you don't have to worry about looking bad because no one's going to see your videos if they're bad videos. So like, expect the first 10 videos to be horrendous. But if you do it every day, you have the ability to become great at your language, talking about your business. So the benefits of TikTok for me, and I'll go into how to do it, but the benefits for TikTok for me are, number one, we're selling B2B. Number one, I got better at creating video. Number two, I've reignited relationships from 15 years ago. People wanted to work with us and inviting us to work on pieces of business because we just rekindled a relationship because they saw me on TikTok. Number four, or wherever I was, is you get really good at talking about your business, which means when you're on sales calls, you've got the language down. And number five, you then have the ability to become tighter about what your value proposition actually is, not just in sales calls, but in your marketing collateral, your website, your headlines, everything. Then the last part is your best videos should be then amplified as ads. So if you normally get 300 videos, but you have a few video, if you get 300 views on a video, but then some of your videos get like 3,000 views, those are your better videos. Run those as ads. People like those. The algorithm has told you what works and what doesn't. So how do you do this? There's a few things. Number one, if you have an old iPhone or Android hanging around, download a tool called Camo Reincubate, which is a tool that makes your iPhone or your Android a video camera that can be connected to your computer. You can do that, or you can just hold your phone and talk about something relevant for your industry. You're going to talk about one of three things. You're going to talk about knowledge, so value-based, meaning like, you know, for me, it's seven things you need to know about Google advertising or how to improve your Google ads in 2024. Then there's meet them where their ad videos. Meet them where their ad videos are declaring that you understand the problem that your customer has in a bunch of different ways. So one video talking about a problem, talking about why the problem is challenging and why they should work with you to overcome the problem. You don't actually give them the solution because a lot of people don't realize that the solution that you have is the thing that they need. They need to first understand that what you have is a strong understanding of the problem, and that will resonate with them. So neither of those two types of videos are likely to go viral. The type that is more likely to go viral are adjacency videos. And adjacency videos are, for me, marketing or advertising adjacent. So I recently had a video go viral where I talked about AI in sales calls. So I showed an onstage demonstration of a person, a robot having a sales call with a human. And people are like horrified. I'm like, this is horrific and amazing at the same time. And it went viral. It had like 230,000 views on TikTok. So my point is, you're creating content that demonstrates that people know, that people that demonstrates that you understand the business very well, which is the value videos. You're creating videos that demonstrate that you understand the customer's problem. Those are the meet them where they're at videos. And then finally, you're going to create adjacency videos, whatever is kind of like in the sphere of influence. For me, it's anything near to advertising. So sales, marketing, other businesses, whatever the case is. And those have a chance of going viral. Commit to doing those videos for a year and you will get great. And you will be very, very surprised at how well your videos will be at driving awareness for your business and you'll be pleasantly surprised at what comes out of that.
I like what you're saying about the kind of personal growth that comes from it. Like, it's not necessarily just, you know, you are posting all this stuff, but it's like you learn to become a better speaker. You learn to efficiency of what you're saying and trim the fat off it and see, you know, so there's so many knock-on effects from just going through that process. And again, it comes down to like being willing to put the stuff out there without being to just get it going and acknowledge that the first bunch are gonna be rubbish and just keep trying to try and better each one, I guess.
Legit.
Yeah. No, it's a good that's a good one. Where can people find you and your company?
Yeah, so our website is brillmedia.co. B as in boy, RILL media.co. And there's a start now button. You can reach out to us and we can have a strategy conversation about your business.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.